Hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. That's ZipRecruiter.com/247sports.
Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons, the ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Back here on the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast, we've been trying to churn out this content. We turn it around for you because the coaching carousel is fluid, and this is, as Barton and I talked about at the beginning of the week, one of the craziest cycles that we have not been covering college football together for as long as our next guest, but this is the nuttiest as it's gotten, right?
As I remember it, man.
Yeah. Well, we got to bring on Dennis Dodd.
The magic bullet they now have in their holster, which they will apply. Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh make a combined $20 million this season. Those two guys alone will make $13 million more than the entire MAC.
Dennis, you have seen more coaching cycles than we have. Is this the craziest one of your professional career?
This is the craziest. Someone brought up the point the other day. I was trying to think of a comp with Tennessee on Sunday, and a great point. George O'Leary at Notre Dame back in the day, I think he was coach for 3 or 4 days, and then, you know, Notre Dame got all high and mighty and decided, you know, a fudge on a resume was enough to let him go. If that almost seems like that's like, wait, a fudge on a resume? Oh, okay. We're, you know, compared to today, that's nothing.
Well,
in fact, in the day, Notre Dame was actually criticized by some for doing that after, you know, some of the things Notre Dame has been involved in over the years. But that's the only comp I can think of.
Barton,
I thought of a different one. So, Dennis, we were talking about Rocky Seato, D coordinator, was hired by UCLA, posted on Facebook, and then the next morning they rescinded the offer because the fan base got up in an uproar. I thought of another one. Do y'all remember June Jones at Arizona State?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It was reported that they had basically agreed on a deal, and I think the fan base, and I can't remember really where June Jones was in his career there. I guess he was coming from SMU, but the fan base wasn't having it, and that deal got blown up. I think they blamed it on they couldn't work it out, but June Jones' side sounded like they felt like the deal was done. So this is less like unprecedented than I think people realize. This has happened before.
I agree. That was 6 years ago. And boy, you brought up a great one. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, he had come from SMU, and it was basically for the Arizona State fans, why are we accepting this, you know, this meet to their to their feeling, mediocre coach from SMU, we're better than that, and it didn't happen. It happened in a period of days where June Jones, who by the way was Chip Kelly before Chip Kelly was in high school. You know, he's one of the fathers of the run and shoot, and then obviously the spread offense. That's a great comparison.
But interestingly enough, too, that they ultimately were right. Like, right? That wasn't that sort of...
Oh, yeah.
June Jones started tailing off after that, and that probably would have been a disastrous hire. So maybe the fan base saved themselves from a bad era there.
His defenses weren't great. Let's put it that way.
But that Arizona State hire ended up going to Todd Graham, who was fired on Sunday, and now Herm Edwards is going to be out here. How seriously are we taking the Edwards report?
I hope not seriously. It looked like it was just thrown out there by a columnist who had no, you know, grasp of reality. Again, what's the difference between him and, you know, and somebody who hasn't coached in 4 years? He's and it's been a lot longer than that, I think, for him.
2008
from college.
Oh, that's the 80s. That. Yeah, he hasn't been in college since San Jose State defensive backs coach in the 80s.
Yeah, so as Arizona State's new head coach, Herm Herm Edwards sure is a great analyst for ESPN. Put it that way.
where do you see as when these athletic directors are trying to make these decisions and they're trying to figure out how we're going to upgrade our program? As you've been working behind the scenes and working the phones, what has been one of your biggest surprises from this coaching cycle, either in terms of names that come up or maybe even maybe even just sort of the approach that some of these schools are taking? Because there's the arms race as we see the investment in infrastructure, as we see the willingness to pay more and more for these absurd salaries. And we'll get to Mike Gundy here in a second. But, you know, what surprised you about this coaching cycle from behind the scenes?
Well, aside from Tennessee, which is a separate unto itself, I think Florida, Dan Mullen being the fourth choice at Florida and was an absolute home run hire. You know, they didn't get Chip Kelly. They didn't get Scott Frost. It looks like they didn't get Mike Gundy. His name was thrown in there. So if you believe all that, then Dan Mullen is a fourth choice. But he's a fourth choice who obviously is a legacy coach there with two championship rings, Urban Meyer's top lieutenant, you know, Tim Tebow, Nick Fitzgerald, Dak Prescott, all the quarterbacks he's developed, I think is really a great hire for Florida. And they struck quickly to the point that, you know, Tennessee's now floundering. Mississippi State struck quickly. I think that's one of the better hires. If I had to rank them right now, I'd go Chip Kelly 1 and Joe Moorhead 2 for continuity's sake. You know, there may not be anyone ever achieve what Dan Mullen did at Mississippi State when you consider the whole thing, but Joe Moorhead is as good and as hot a coordinator as there is. I'm just surprised he took this job. He's been offered a lot of other jobs, and he's a guy from the Northeast that doesn't really, you know, hasn't really looked out for many jobs. I didn't expect him to take one in the SEC, but good for him and good for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I thought that John Cohen, the AD at Mississippi State, had one of the best searches in this cycle because, like you said, I agree, it was a great hire. You're getting a guy that's coming in that is really good operating with athletic quarterbacks, which is what Mississippi State's got on their roster. He's going to be able to kind of take the current roster and build it out. The question I would have is with his staff, but I would assume that he's, you know, got those questions answered. But then if you look at the other guys that Mississippi State was looking at, whether it was Chad Morris or Jeremy Pruitt or Brent Venables, like those were the type of names that were coming out. And I think those are all outstanding names, particularly for that fit. And you're getting Joe Moorhead, a guy that is a hot coordinator, but also a proven head coach in terms of what he did at Fordham. I'm a huge fan of just the way that process played out for Mississippi State. I think they should feel really good about their AD and their head coach.
I agree.
Is that so in the time, remember, because Tennessee was open first. So that means Tennessee,
way before.
Tennessee was
like
open first. And then Florida was open. Then Florida got Mississippi State's coach. And then Mississippi State found the perfect successor to Dan Mullen. And Tennessee on Tuesday night officially turned down by Mike Gundy after reported meetings in Dallas. Quick shout out to our friend Brett McMurphy. How about Brett sources getting the scoop on that story, and ESPN had to say Brett McMurphy reports.
Yeah,
how about that?
The entity who let Brett go, but that's another story.
Yeah. Okay. So Mike Gundy, how realistic, Dennis, or where were you? Because I want to get to the John Curry side of this, because I know that you've spoken about Curry on this podcast before, particularly after the hire coming from Kansas State. Then also the Mike Gundy side of this. At what point yesterday were you entertaining the idea that Gundy was serious this time? Because he's been known to come to the table. He's always been known to come to the table, and he's always going to listen. But he has returned time and time again to Stillwater. Did this situation seem different at any time on Tuesday?
Not to me. I tweeted it and I wrote it that, look, I think he was serious about interviewing. I never thought he'd do it because that's his pattern in the past, that he goes right up to the altar and then walks away. for whatever reason. Some guys want the attention. Some guys want the love. Some guys want their ego massage. In this case, maybe he was trying to get something at Oklahoma State from T. Boone Pickens and the AD, Mike Holder. But I tweeted it last night. I said, I'll believe it when I see it, because you know, everybody was down that road. I just can't see Mike Gundy, again, in that fishbowl, being a guy who is going to have to be vetted by Bubba and Pigeon Forge as part of the search committee, because that's what it's become at Tennessee. I'm sorry. That he would jump into that, where he's got, I've said this before, I think he'll retire to his ranch in Stillwater, near Stillwater, 110 acres, before he takes another job. I really do. I think he'll just see, he would say, even at this age, screw it. You know, you're going to fire me? I'm done. And they're not going to fire him. I mean, there's a handful of coaches who have won 6 of the last 8 years, and he's one of those guys.
So the question I would have, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, Dennis, but if you heard around the campfire, but Tennessee already was a job where you don't really know how appealing it is, what the, you know, it's a sort of to each his own in terms of whether they consider Tennessee an elite job. And now I wonder if the fan base has spooked off any candidates, how much they've spooked candidates, and whether that limits Tennessee's pool to choose from at this point. Do you have any sense on how spooked people are about just sort of the what's going on in Knoxville right now?
Well, we might as well get into that, the Schiano thing. I mean, it's a smoldering tire fire where – they whiffed on Schiano, they whiffed on Gundy, they didn't get Chip Kelly, they didn't get Dan Mullen, and you just wonder, you know, who's going to go in there. The problem from the beginning for Tennessee was, and I tried to make this clear in the Lane Kiffin column, is that this was a year when there weren't going to be enough home run hires to go around. There were a lot of good jobs, but not everybody was going to hit a home run. And the Roos Chris in Knoxville ran out of fillets, and they had to go to hamburger, and maybe that's what Greg Schiano was. You know, that's not a bad thing. But let's start with that. And then secondarily, Tennessee has to realize who it is, and we've talked about this before. On a good day, to the fifth best program in the SEC, and it's not getting any better. I'm being charitable. You know, Georgia's better, Florida's better. Alabama's better, Auburn's better, LSU's better. That's five I just named off the top of my head. So they overvalue who they are. So those two combinations, and then you get into the situation where this righteous indignation over secondhand hearsay about the Sandusky case is really conflated and appropriated into protest over the hire. I thought that was disrespectful and wrong. But on the other hand, Tennessee, maybe they were going to trot this out at the press conference. Maybe they didn't strategically understand how this could happen. People started talking about this beforehand. So how good a job is it? It's a good job, but now it's a damaged job, to the point that whoever comes in there is literally going to have to be approved by the masses. I think I texted John Curry last night. I said, if you get Gundy, that's coming back from nine runs down in the bottom of the ninth with two outs. And he didn't respond, but that would have been a great hire. But they didn't get him.
It's funny that, you know, if people were truly disturbed by the Sandusky connection and just didn't want any of that connection on their staff or in their program, that's one thing. That's one bucket of people. But there is, I think, very clearly a bucket, and whether it's a small bucket, a big bucket, a medium-sized bucket, but there is a bucket of people that were, as you said, conflating that and using that as an excuse to not want this guy who they thought was a mediocre coach. The irony is the guy that they're going to have to end up going with, whether it's now Jeff Brohm, Dave Doran, or T. Martin, is there's no way to – spin it, in my opinion, that those guys are better football coaches right now, based on what we know, than Greg Schiano. Now, maybe they'll become that, but it's for that to be sort of the what that movement has sort of spurned is going to be a tough pill to swallow, I think, for Tennessee fans. If they had gotten Mike Gundy out of this, like you said, then wow, it was all worth it because you got one of the best coaches in college football. But that obviously that didn't happen.
No.
Where do they go? I mean, is Les Miles on the phone?
I haven't heard that at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than like fans saying that we should go for him. The reports that I'm seeing have been Jeff Rahm and
Kevin Steele.
Kevin Steele. Yep. That's the other one. Yeah.
Everybody loves Kevin Steele. He's a great guy. A finalist for the Broyles Award this year, by the way, one of five guys considered the best assistant coach in the country. But 9-36 at Baylor from 99 to 2002. I don't know if anybody could have done better at Baylor back then, but that's it. I'm just pointing out that's his head coaching experience.
And Holgorsen did hang 70 on him in the Orange Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
He's got that. He will always have that stain on his record.
Right. There is that. So, I mean, you're talking about fallback positions, and he might be as good as anybody right now.
I can't help but think.
At age 59, by the way, whatever that means.
I mean, if Herm Edwards is getting trotted out here, age ain't nothing but a number, baby. I mean.
Right, that's right.
Butch Davis is down at FIU. Woo. Well, there is not a better show for us to talk about hirings and firings in the coaching carousel than this one right here because we are so closely linked with our good friends at ZipRecruiter. Now, as you know, you can go on ZipRecruiter right now and you can post jobs for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. This is good for businesses of all sizes. And what it does is it helps you find great talent for your business without taking up a lot of your time. You don't have to get stuck in a large stack of resumes because you won't just have the right tools. You'll have the smartest tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you receive the best possible matches. It really is no wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. It's ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. So right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Go into ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. That's ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. One more time, try it for free today, ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. All right, so let's turn our attention to Jimbo Fisher. Florida State and Texas A&M, we're recording this November 29th, Wednesday. It's about 9:33 Eastern time. So that is probably, of all the situations we've discussed, the most fluid right now. There was an interesting report in the Tallahassee Democrat that said Jimbo Fisher has three important relationships with FSU. One is with the University of President. One is with the Athletic Director, John Thrasher University President, Stan Wilcox Athletic Director. One is with the President of the Booster Club. And of those three relationships, only one of them is currently healthy. I have entertained the idea more and more that this might not be an indictment on where Florida State is or where Texas A&M is, but that this might be a time after, you know, flirtations, after having his name mentioned for Texas, after talking to LSU twice, I think that this is the time that Jimbo Fisher might do it.
I don't pretend to predict what's going to happen here because I think Jimbo Fisher is going to wake up one day and decide to stay or go. I mean, I get everything that's being written. I don't particularly know why Texas A&M is a better job, aside from maybe they can outspend Florida State. And if personal relationships are ruptured, look how A&M treated the last coach and how they soured on him. With the best record at A&M, by the way, in 20 years, I think second winningest coach all time or third winningest coach all time at A&M and won a Heisman Trophy. So it's buyer beware. I can't predict what's going to happen here. I kind of think he's going to stay just because it's a better place to win championships at Florida State, but I wouldn't predict it.
Mm. What do you think, Barton?
I think he's gone. I think the right. I'm just going off of what like our guys at Knowles 247 are hearing. I'm right. going off of what people on the staff are sort of sensing. I think this is it. And like we talked about Chip earlier in the week, I think
go get Tiger.
I think Florida State is resigned a little bit to this, so much so that they got their finger on the trigger to just pull it on Willie Taggart if this happens and have an easy transition.
And how about that? How about if that happens? Then what is that? It's a slap in the face to Oregon, leave after 1 year.
Who's feeling bad for Oregon? Okay.
Nobody.
Nobody. And especially the way as bad as that tenure started. I mean, Dennis, you wrote about the first like two mm-hmm. months of that Willie Taggart tenure at Oregon. I mean, if you're reading the tea leaves and if you're looking, reading tea leaves and looking for signs, and Willie Taggart wants to get back to the Southeast, and certainly his name has been floated around as somebody who would pick up the call to come back to the Sunshine State. I mean, I don't know. I just like Barton. Doesn't it feel like that would almost like be a decent, like a pretty good hit the reboot button for Florida State? Taggart's only 41.
Oh, I think it'd be a good hire for Florida State. I'm just saying that in that scenario, watch out for Phil Knight bringing all his power to bear to get Scott Frost there. They're close. They have a good relationship. Scott Frost loves Phil Knight. In fact, he suggested to me last summer or summer of 2016 before he started that UCF got their deal re-upped for significant money because of him with Nike. And so if I were Nebraska, I'd be very nervous. Everybody expects this to happen after the American champ game on Saturday. Not so fast. Phil Knight versus Tom Osborne. Let's see that one.
So is that the way that plays out? I mean, like, because I think that you even said on this podcast, the idea you floated the Scott Frost Nebraska before it was trendy. You were like you went to go see the band when they were still playing in the local pub before they came
at the
out
40 Watt Club.
Yeah, man. Before they came out with their first major label debut. I wonder what's your read on that now? Like in waiting for the American Athletic Conference game to come, which you would sure read that as a sign of respect from Nebraska and from Frost that we're just gonna. We all understand what's about to happen. We're just going to sit back.
Yeah.
Is there any part of Scott Frost's thinking that would all of a sudden leave Nebraska at the altar to go run away with Phil Knight to Oregon?
Well, all we've heard really since this became a hot thing is, big money for multiple years, more than 5 years for Scott Frost. And it was a decision between Florida and Nebraska. Well, okay, so Florida's filled, so automatically – but what I'm saying is, if you start thinking about Oregon, I mean, what's the better job? Is it harder to win championships at or division at Nebraska or Oregon? I don't know. I mean, I can't answer that question. And if you've got a relationship with one of the most powerful people in the country, and certainly at Oregon, we'll give you anything you want. Desperate to get Oregon back on the map, then I think you got to take a step back. I understand Nebraska's home. I just think that I think he's got has a decision to make. That's all I'm saying. If that indeed happens,
I think though the one reason why I wouldn't be too I'm not as worried about the Nebraskan is he's not going to want to screw over Nebraska, and there seems to be like as quiet as it is around Nebraska right now.
It's done.
It seems like there is a verbal agreement of some sort in place, a wink and a nod or something. And I would think he would be reluctant to back out of something like that if there is something like that in place.
You're using common sense, which is just doesn't apply to these things this year. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. Well, let's get into the playoffs, man. What's we got championship weekend coming up. Dennis, is there any chaos scenario, Armageddon, that we're overlooking here in terms of making this thing tricky on the committee?
Well, it's pretty easy for me. The top four, if they win, they're in. Kirby Hoka said as much on Tuesday night. If not, then Alabama at number five is just kind of a chess piece. They can move around and, you know, do what they want with. I think this list probably goes down to number eight with Ohio State. There's a cutoff there. TCU at number 11. I suppose if they blow out Oklahoma, they've got a chance to be in. But no one's answered the question. It wasn't even asked. What if the top four all lose? What if Miami beats Clemson? Auburn loses to Georgia. Now, we know what happens there. Those are placeholder spots, I would think. Oklahoma loses and Wisconsin loses. That at least begins the conversation for Ohio State rising from eight to get into the top four. I wonder what your guys' thoughts are on that. Ohio State, because that's the biggest discussion right now with that.
I hadn't even entertained that, the all four losing yet. So yeah. I'm going to sort of see if I can stream of consciousness go through this. So Georgia and Miami would be in. ACC champ, SEC champ, yeah. No matter who wins, they're in. And then does it boil down to still a – what basically that looks like? Does, you know, how does Oklahoma? I think you go then Ohio State, right? So Ohio State and Alabama would kind of be my hunch on that.
Yeah, I think so. And you'd have to enter the committee, even though they won't admit it, would have to break the seal on having two teams from one conference in. We all know it's about the best four teams, but in that scenario, who would have the best argument against being left out?
I think right. Clemson could still be in with a loss.
Clemson at number one could still be in.
And does that – a two-loss Clemson, you know, second place in the ACC, mm-hmm. would they – because, you know, all of a sudden then I think that scenario puts in play maybe like a USC if they win and beat Stanford.
Yeah.
You know, because they still got two losses and they're a conference champ. TCU obviously would have an argument. I think the only thing that Alabama has going for it is just it only has one loss, and that one loss is to Auburn. But does that loss look a lot worse if Auburn becomes a three-loss Auburn?
Yeah. And Alabama, God, what was that? I was trying to think of the stat I had on Alabama. I think I already used it. But, you know, their schedule strength wasn't great. I really thought, being at that game Saturday at the Iron Bowl, when it became obvious they were going to lose, I started thinking, boy, they could really use a touchdown here cosmetically. And, you know, to make it look 26-21, because as time goes on, that makes it look like a better loss. But it was their first double-digit loss since the 2014 Sugar Bowl. That's bad. They're beat up. That's bad. And for the last 3 or 4 weeks, they just haven't looked the same. You know, they're competing against a standard that is their own. You know, this is a team that twice in 11 and 12 lost in November and still played for the national championship when they're only two spots. Last year was maybe their best defense ever, at least under Nick Saban. And this team isn't the same. So I just wonder how the committee views that. That being said, Ohio State was that team last year. Alabama is this year's Ohio State. That finished second in its division, we shall see.
I think that I'm already into tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist mode. I think that whatever scenario plays out, we're gonna see. Because also, you know, you talk about the top four losing. The top four aren't even the Vegas favorites. Ohio State's favored by six.
Is that right? Well, I did know that.
But it's, you know, you start to like look at the way this plays out. I just I I think that if Ohio State wins, it's in.
Really? So here's
any score.
Yeah,
they just take Wisconsin's place.
Yeah. I just
okay.
How about
Wisconsin at 12-0, the only Power Five undefeated, automatically out after losing. Let's say they lose to the gun. And at number four, that would have to be the conclusion, is what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, but I think Big Ten's going to get one in.
Brand name recognition.
This is my argument for that, Chip, is why I agree that they've got a pretty good shot. Because if you look right now, Auburn's sitting at number two in the country with two losses. Over a no-loss Wisconsin and one-loss Oklahoma with a win over Ohio State and some other pretty strong resumes. That tells me they just think Auburn's really good. They just look at it. They see how they're playing. They think they're really good. And right now, Ohio State and Alabama are sitting here with, you know, the same amount of quality wins. Ohio State's got one more bad loss. But if it's a beauty contest, and if you're just going to put the team up there that you think looks really good, if you have an excuse to put a team up there that you think is the best, Ohio State has got one more opportunity here against Wisconsin to leave a good taste in the mouth of the committee and sort of have a take a strut up down the runway and prove that they are the best, that Alabama is going to be sitting at home. So I think if they win that game by two touchdowns plus,
yeah,
I think it's going to be hard for the committee to resist putting them in just based on the last thing they've seen from them, contrasted with the last thing they've seen from Alabama.
The case for is that the committee would have left out the Big Ten champion 2 years in a row, and that's political implications. That's the case for one of them. The case against, Ohio State's two losses were by 46 points total, and really an unforgivable loss where they didn't show up off the bus at Iowa, 55-24, got handled at home by Oklahoma. And then what's their best win? Penn State. I don't know. Penn State? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, number nine, Penn State.
No,
they played one good quarter.
Their best win would be Wisconsin.
Their best win would be Wisconsin at that point. Yes. Yeah. Right.
So you just I don't know.
So is that enough? I talked to a guy who used to cover Ohio State this week, and he said, I can think of six teams over the last 20 years at Ohio State that were better than this one. And he's assuming they win. He just came back to the eye test of seeing them lose those two games by 46 points. Give up, I figured out, 30% of their yards and total defense in those two losses. I mean, those were really bad. So do they? And don't forget the Big Ten 800-pound gorilla in the room, 2 years running where they haven't scored a point in the playoff. Now, that shouldn't be a consideration, but it's something to talk about. So, yeah.
I liked, Barton, your take last night. I mean, this is seeing the adjustments this week just kind of sets the stage for them to be able to do whatever the hell they want next
week. They have set a precedent where they could just, they're freewheeling. Like, there's no structure or restrictions. They can just say, this is what we think, and the reasoning can just be because that's what it looks like, you know.
And
that's what it's
supposed to be, I guess. You know, they did that in 14, where everybody went, "Whoa, TCU, okay." And when you sat down and thought about it, you went, "Okay, yeah, that's probably the four best teams." But it's the way they went about it, where they could have had TCU fourth going into the final week instead of third, and that really would mitigate it a lot of the consternation and criticism of, wait a minute, TCU just won by 52 points and dropped three spots. You know, they say this is new every week, but they can't deny the continuity of people. They're the ones who are making an elaborate show out of this week to week. You know, they're the ones that are making comparisons every week. You know, they're the ones that put three loss Mississippi State over an unbeaten UCF, and can't really explain it, you know. So don't tell us about, oh, we start over every week. No, you have to be accountable for where you put these teams.
Mm.
And I thought it was telling last night, Kirby Hokut got on and he listed all the criteria that they're tasked with using, whether it's head-to-head, conference championships. And then he goes to say, but they don't tell us how much we have to weight one criteria versus the other. They don't tell us what's the most important. They don't tell us how much to, you know, it goes back to like, all right, well, if you're going to have this criteria and you're not even going to discuss, you know, the relative importance of each criteria point, then that goes back to just, all right, you can just do whatever you want. Yeah. And I thought that was telling that he said that.
I keep saying that. I said, that's why I'm just so over this Tuesday night thing, because I keep telling people they can and will do whatever they want. You know, if the BCS was so wrong with the computers, then this is all humans and they can do whatever they want. You know, when Notre Dame was in the running, I looked at the criteria. You know, one of the criteria are conference championships. Well, Notre Dame's automatically eliminated. They can't win a conference championship, and there are only three or four criteria that are written down there.
Wait. No. Technically, it is championships won, so Shamrock Series is what it's all about.
Okay. Well, okay. with an asterisk. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Real quick, argument against USC. I've been thinking about this a long time. 5 touchdown loss at Notre Dame. If it ever comes to that, do you want that team in there?
Right, which is the same argument you have against Ohio State. Which is, yep. You could argue that Notre Dame, because that was a USC game where they're on the road at Notre Dame and they're really beat up at that point in the season and they get blown out. Whereas that's a lot better case than you have with Ohio State, who was healthy on the road against a mediocre Iowa team and gets blown out. So, if you're making that case for Notre Dame, I think Ohio State has even less leg to stand on.
Yeah, no, I agree. And USC would have a quality win in beating number 12 Stanford. Ohio State would beat number 4 Wisconsin, but I'd love to see their resumes side by side. I don't think they're that much different. It's USC, I was going to raise the point, that's a rematch. They would have beaten Stanford, number 12 Stanford, twice in a season. Seven of the 9 conference championship games this week are rematches. And if there was ever a year not to have a conference championship, it's the Big 12, which is reinstituting theirs. Oklahoma's done enough. All they can do is lose the Heisman, get players injured for the playoff, and do something they've already done, which is beat TCU. I mean, there's really no need for it this year.
Yeah.
All right, give us your 5 Power 5 conference championship game winners.
Ooh, go ahead, Bard.
I wasn't prepared for this. All right, I'm going to go.
We filled out our expert picks, right?
Yeah, I actually haven't turned mine in yet, so I got to do that after this. I'm going to go with Wisconsin over Ohio State. I'm going to go with Auburn. I'm going to go with the Pac-12 one's tough. I'll go with Oklahoma in the Big 12. I'll go with Clemson. And give me Stanford out west.
Dennis? Yeah.
I've got Clemson over Miami. Auburn, I think, might be the best team in the country right now, over Georgia. Oklahoma over TCU. Wisconsin over Ohio State. I guess that qualifies as an upset. And
it does.
Barely, I guess. But and then Stanford. I think they're playing at a high, high level. This would be, by the way, I think this is right. 4 conference titles in 6 years for Stanford, something like that. Yeah, that is right.
The Pac-12 North undefeated.
Undefeated.
The Pac-12 championship game. Give me Stanford over USC. Give me Oklahoma over TCU. And I'll be kicking, screaming mad if we don't get Baker Mayfield in the playoffs. So I'm fanning out over that one. I am rooting on Saturday afternoon for Oklahoma over TCU. Give me Wisconsin over Ohio State. Just because I think Wisconsin's played really, really well this year. I've got Clemson over Miami in a game that's probably closer than the spread indicates. But Clemson wins that game when Malik Rozier has the ball and has to drive it on Clemson's defense and can't. And because my picks have been so terrible this year, I've got to go contrarian here. I'm going Georgia over Auburn with Sony Michel as the game MVP.
Hey, Something is going to happen.
Yeah, that's not a bad pick, considering it's now really up in the air about Kerryon Johnson. You know, I thought Sunday when I was there, he was in helmet and shorts, and it looks like he's okay, and day-to-day, and now you see coming out of there, it looks really dicey, and I don't think they can win without him. I mean, they've got some backups, but he's arguably the SEC's offensive player of the year, so that's a good pick.
Did you know that against Georgia Tech, Sony Michel became the number 3 all-time rusher in Georgia history behind number 2 Nick Chubb and number 1 Herschel Walker?
Wow. No, I did not know that.
Mm. I'm sorry. That's my bold prediction for the weekend. I think he's going to shine.
There you go.
He is Dennis Dodd. You can follow him on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS. You can follow him, as always, at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Love a good visit from the Dodd father. Thank you very much, Dennis.
All right. Thanks, guys. The magic bullet they now have in their holster, which they will apply. Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh make a combined $20 million this season. Those two guys alone will make $13 million more than the entire MAC.